It is a great pleasure to welcome to Wide Moat Investing Summit 2021 returning MOI Global Instructor Eric Delamarter, the portfolio manager of Half Moon Capital, a research-intensive, deep value-oriented long-short partnership that invests across various sectors and markets with a focus on small, mid-cap companies and special situations. Prior to founding Half Moon, Eric was at Stellium Investment Management, a value-oriented hedge fund in New York, an associate at Lineage Capital, a middle market private equity fund, and an investment banking analyst at RBC Capital Markets. Eric has an MBA from the Heilbrun Center for Graham and Dodd Investing at Columbia Business School with a concentration in applied value investing, as well as a BA from the University of Michigan. Always a pleasure to have you with us, Eric. I look forward to your presentation today. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John. Always a pleasure to present here, and thank you for that introduction. We're now almost about to anniversary our 10th year at Half Moon Capital, so thank you for that. And over that time, here's the last seven names we've presented. So we are eighth, as you can see. Of Tile Shop, the most recent one, which we presented the Best Ideas Conference earlier this year in January. Despite having performed quite well, the reason we thought it worthy of reintroduction here is we believe that the risk reward is arguably as compelling, if not more so, given the sequence of events that has occurred at this point than perhaps even was then. And as always has been the case here, this is our highest conviction idea. We have always presented our highest conviction idea at the time of these conferences. So thank you again for that, John. So Tile Shop is a specialty retailer of floor and wall tiles. Just last week, uplisted to the NASDAQ, so a very timely situation. It is in the course of lapping and improving upon some ERP and operational issues and normalizing its business hours. So the tailwinds are quite strong here as it relates to forward performance, in addition to the macro backdrop, which, as we'll get into, is very favorable for their industry, in particular their products. Company has a very strong balance sheet, no debt, about $36 million in cash. We believe there's about 100% upside here. There are scenarios for much more, but that's kind of our 12 to 16, 18 month target, with a course to outcome driven by a handful of catalysts, which we'll get into. So the Tile Shop has 143 stores across the US, essentially east of the Rockies, as you can see here in this map, clustered around various MSAs. Certainly a lot of opportunity for unit growth within those existing markets, and in the medium term, perhaps even expansion into the West Coast would be logical. The floor plans in these stores are about 20,000 square feet, purely dedicated to tile. That is about 4 to 5 times larger than you'd see in like a Lowe's or Home Depot. So that is really their specialization in the area they means to differentiate. Closest peer kind of in this category would be Floor and Decor. There's similar floor plan dedication to tiles. Tile Shop is operating in kind of a higher end segment of it. Their typical tile price is about 4 to 5 times that of a Floor and Decor. These are more specialized products. They're sourcing from over 200 suppliers across the globe. The reason I think that's relevant is most all these products are unique to them. You can't buy but few of them elsewhere. And the fact that their supplier base is so diversified, I think, is particularly relevant now, given the supply chain challenge that you're starting to see and have been seeing from some of their peers who are sourcing, say, from concentrated producers in China, where the backdrop is or the backlogs are more challenging from a freight situation. To understand kind of how the sale dynamic works here, the typical transaction works is influenced by or pushed by the installers, the designers, the actual people that are doing the work, where the actual homeowner or purchaser will come into the store and perhaps look at 2 or 3 options that designer or installer has requested. And so that's kind of the backdrop to understanding how the sales mechanics of sale work. So moving to the trading and the NASDAQ uplisting that I just mentioned. So back in March, following some a push from some activists, the company announced its intention to relist on the NASDAQ. It had been fully compliant with all SEC requirements. So that course has actually came along pretty fast relative. But despite that, and the fact that they had a strong Q1, as you can see in the lower right here, the chart from March to even as recently as last week, the stock essentially just went sideways. And this is principally as a result of selling pressure from an ousted former employee and former executive who was a co-founder of the business, who sold essentially 12% of all of the shares outstanding. So during that stretch, over a third of the stock trading volume on any given day was him selling. He's doing so on a kind of a haphazard retail basis. So that has been a lag in the stock that now has ended. He sold the last of the shares earlier this month. In fact, 2 weeks ago, just today. And then just last week, last Thursday, in fact, the stock began trading effectively on the NASDAQ. So what does this mean from a technical standpoint? Well, now the potential shareholder base is significantly larger. Many mutual funds and funds themselves are precluded from owning stocks that don't trade on a major exchange. They previously been on the pink sheet. So that's no longer the case. The potential future, potential sell side coverage is certainly much more relevant now to a whole host of sell side analysts, which would expand institutional awareness. And this is all probably going to be happening over the next coming months. And as well as a Russell 2000 inclusion, they would meet on current dollar terms of their market cap would be well above the threshold to be included in the next rebalance, which is approaching coming December. All this results in improved trading liquidity, better awareness, and likely stock appreciation. A couple quick precedent transactions in the uplisting world. Tuesday morning, just uplisted last month. Since then, the stock's up about 50% as the trading dynamics have improved. And last year, TiVo and Sunwest, well, different trading dynamics around surrounding that somewhat, are all multiples of their pre-uplisting price. So stepping back to these performance challenges I referenced, they undertook an ERP implementation process in 18-19. It really led to a lot of disruption in the business. This is not uncommon for companies. SAP integrations of their ERP systems is, a recurring theme or challenge that some companies, that many companies have faced. So what this did was it enabled, they weren't able to take advantage of a lot of the sales opportunities. Order fulfillment was poor. They ran into inventory shortages. In fact, were some major disruptions along those lines, essentially operating in the dark as related to KPIs and performance at the store level, weren't fulfilling orders effectively, and perhaps in that period alienated some customers. So here, as you can see, the growth stalled, margins were pressured. And then came the pandemic. So these, as a business, they took, I would say, a more aggressive closing cadence than peers. Most all sorts of closed throughout Q2, and they've been very slow. They were very slow in reopening relative to others. And in the normalization of business hours only really started to come back last November, and that was when they started opening stores back to 7 o'clock. Yet up until even as recently as May, none of their stores have been open on Sunday. And if you look at the foot traffic for their peers, that's one of the busiest days, if not the busiest. So they've started to do that. I think that alone will result in 10 to 20% increase in sales over the course of the next 12 months and this year itself. So they've been operating kind of in that slower reopening cadence, and that is now largely behind them. And the ERP system that caused those challenges have, by accounts from primary research efforts who have undertaken conversations with the management team, and most notably the empirical evidence being the strong Q1 margins, are essentially rectified, or at least the major challenges have been handled. So now they can capitalize and essentially harvest the benefits of that system. And going into this period, which we think is very attractive from a macro standpoint, being the R&R, the remodeling activity backlog is has been very strong. Factors that are driving this are some reopening. Essentially, there are folks who were not comfortable perhaps having maintenance or remodel professionals in their home, but now are following the broad adoption of the vaccine. And also backlogs have been extended. You're seeing in professionals not able to even fulfill jobs and booking things 9-12 months out. So the pent-up demand here is substantial. Thus, you're seeing that in home building activity, remodel activity in the index here itself. So this should pave the way for at least several quarters, if not years, of strong tailwinds for the business to operate. And moving to the valuation, the stock has really kind of been orphaned. It doesn't screen that great on an LTM basis for those factors I just mentioned. There's some one-time charges in there related to a legal settlement that is not an event, is no longer relevant to the business. Company doesn't provide guidance, and as referenced, there's no sell-side coverage from which folks to benchmark forward numbers and or screen on that basis. So it's trading at 7x my forward EBITDA, which is 9%, which is 9% free cash flow yield. I'd say depressed by any means on an absolute basis. And then looking at its closest peer, Floor & Decor, they trade at over 22x EBITDA, different growth profile on the unit basis, but similar drivers and product mix. If you take 12x, I think is an unambitious multiple to ascribe here and apply that to that forward number for Tile Shop, you're getting to about $14 a share. That's over 65% upside. And that's a pretty modest base case scenario there. It's only 10% top line growth, limited incremental operating improvements of reference, and essentially zero unit growth this year. Now with their stronger balance sheet, I think that, and now that the ERP system has been rectified, they should be in a better position to reaccelerate that unit growth. I think that's where you really start to get upside to the stock in terms of multiples of where it currently trades, if they're able to, once that gets going again. So, of course, want to mention some of the risks. The primary driver of this business is R&R, is renovation. And given the tailwinds, I think you're mitigated by that. This isn't driven by housing starts and or home building activity, which tends to be more cyclical historically. But people, through cycles, as you can see, often is a more stable volume than, say, home building and home residential home activity. If there was, say, another hiccup in the ERP system, certainly that could be a challenge. I'd say the mitigant and against any of those issues would be the fact the current share price really is giving them no credit for any future growth or margin improvement or even margin stabilization. And so tying it all together here, NASDAQ relisting, expanded shareholder base, and likely Russell inclusion, as well as sell side coverage, all helping support the stock. Fundamental background is very attractive here. Ongoing consumer spending and improvement. Home prices are at record highs. People have that wealth effect and are also monetizing through refinancing and using those proceeds to improve upon their house. People typically live in a house for 15 to 20 years, but styles change and things like kitchens and bathroom fixtures and tiles get replaced on average 5 to 7 years in the market set in which Tile Shop operates. So you're seeing a lot more of a kind of a tail to their business and recurring somewhat revenue profile. And if they can really start to monetize or sink the fruits of their ERP system, which was a long ways coming and there were challenges to it, you can really start to see margins perhaps getting back into the high teens. That's where you can really see stock getting probably back into the 20s. And to drive all this, the company has been essentially in the dark. People that follow maybe special situations and corporate activity are probably aware of this uplisting, but not the general kind of long-only funds and traditional value and smaller cap mutual funds and hedge funds. So that'll all probably be coming, sell-side initiations and outreach from management now that things are now in order and they're have a more perhaps compelling story than ever. is forthcoming. I think given there is a lot of green space for them to expand the business, so a potential financial buyer may see value in that. That could provide a cap on the downside, but also significant upside if they seek to pursue a sale process. And, you know, I'm not assuming that here, but I thought it worth mentioning. And that's really it. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you so much, Eric. Could you just shed a little bit more light on that delisting that had happened and then the relisting? What was the impetus for the delisting in the first place? And then can you talk a little bit more about the activist role in getting the company relisted?
Yeah, certainly. So going into 2019, the company was having some challenges in terms of unit openings and ERP system drove some of those financial challenges. So the legacy management team, none of these operators still involved, took it as an opportunity to delist the stock. They didn't deregister. That's an important distinction, as they continued to file all requisite SEC filings. The stock dropped significantly, as you suspect, before selling from those that couldn't hold securities that are traded on the pink sheets. Then those operators, those former management team and one board member, took that as an opportunity to come in and buy a significant amount of the stock. That resulted in, as you mentioned, as you'd imagine, turmoil and tumble from the legacy shareholders. A lawsuit ensued that was then settled about a year ago. Those kind of maybe bad operators that were responsible for that then moved on. Enter last fall, there are two parties, B. Riley and 272 Capital, together wrote a letter requesting the uplisting, outlining the merits of that. It was pretty evident and pretty clear that there was almost no downside to doing so, and a pretty favorable and a number of favorable reasons to uplist. The company agreed to do that, has been kind of more open to discussions about with shareholders, and that's kind of what led up to the subsequent relisting. And those parties are still involved, those shareholders, as legacy activists that I mentioned. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. How would you kind of grade the management at this point? Are you happy with the management? Are their incentives aligned? Just a little more color on that.
Yeah, I mean, so I give, you know, candidly, management, okay. It's a small company. There, this CEO has been with the business for, 25 years. I think it's his only company he's ever worked for. He started literally on like a loading dock. So he's very well versed in the business. I wouldn't say from a capital allocation standpoint, you know, okay. It would be nice to bolster his team, particularly if they're going to pursue unit growth, reacceleration, to have a very strong operator, a COO perhaps, around him to help facilitate the effect of that process. But, you know, I think they're fine with what they have, but to really accelerate the kind of story and to get the growth really growing, it would be nice to have a couple other strong executives on the team. The fact that there are some activists still around, I think maybe that would be supportive of that. But if nothing else, those are folks that are going to be looking out for shareholders' interest and capital, irrespective of who's running the show internally.
How do you look at online competition in this space longer term?
So there is online competition. The typical, that way that works is they'll send you, that's most common in vinyl tiles. So vinyl tiles are like $1 or $2 a square foot. The company sends you those tiles. You can pick out what you want. However, Tile Shop doesn't sell vinyl tiles. They're kind of commodity, new kind of lower end home build products. They're selling more specialized, higher end product that doesn't lend itself to someone ordering online and, comparing four or five of those tiles. It's the kind of thing a lot of people want to come tangibly touch, see, look and see in person or in the store, hence the need and the value of their showrooms versus, say, you know, the online option where you can scroll through and the colors may be a little challenging to match, but their online presence is expanding now, you know, with the ERP system and such, they can should be a little better, better handle that. And I think it may be worth mentioning a lot of the influencers in the kind of social media realm will say, here's a floor design or a kitchen remodel and tag the product. And then people can then go to the tile shop's website and or go to the store and see that product in person. So that's a kind of the bigger driver so much than say someone going on, you know, Googling vinyl tile. That's a little bit different side of the market than they're involved with.
And can you provide just some more color on the upside you see in the shares over the next year or two? Kind of just, you know, do you look at it also on a scenario basis at all and kind of what could happen over the next couple of years?
Yeah, certainly. So to look to 2021, to just get a sense of the, what underlies my assumptions to the numbers I put forth, I'm assuming 10% top line growth. So you have to remember we're lapping all those other challenges we had last year. That really only gets them back to essentially the 2019 level, which was, again, a challenged year from an execution standpoint for them. So from a revenue and volume standpoint, I think that's quite conservative. And on a margin basis, I'm assuming a 15% EBITDA margin. They just put up close to 17% EBITDA margin in Q1. So I think that is also kind of a conservative assumption. That is what got me to the, you know, that 7.5 times on a current basis number and that 9% for 8.5-9% free cash flow number. If you start to look out to say 2021, let's assume the ERP system issues have been fully rectified and they're really kind of able to expand on a unit basis. You know, what you've seen with other businesses are kind of in those inflection points is you get a significant re-rating. There's no way it'll trade even at the low teens EBITDA level. So that's, you know, further out, but, you know, certainly on the horizon. And again, with potential encouragement from activist large shareholders and or management bolstering their ranks could certainly be achievable. And I think we'll start to get more color as to what that plan is as this year unfolds. Now that stock is uplisted and some of these major challenges have at least been improved upon or rectified.
Terrific. Well, I will leave it there. Eric, I would just encourage our members to feel free to follow up with any further thoughts or questions. Thank you so much for coming on to provide this update. We truly appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, John. Happy to chat with anyone that has questions or would like to delve in further. But thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Goodbye for now.